You're listening to From the Public Domain, short stories, excerpts, and essays from the public domain. I'm your host, Susie Alphins. The Good Anna, Part 3 of Part 2, adapted for radio. It had been plain to see in the 6 years these women were together how Anna gradually had come to lead. Not really lead, of course, for Mrs. Lentman never could be led. She was so very devious in her ways. But Anna had come to have direction whenever she could learn what Mrs. Lentman meant to do before the deed was done. Now it was hard to tell which would win out. Mrs. Lentman had her unhearing mind and her happy way of giving a pleasant, well-diffused attention. And then she had it on her side that, after all, this thing was already done. Anna was, as usual, determined for the right. She was stiff and pale with her anger and her fear, and nervous and all a tremble, as was her usual way when a bitter fight was near. Mrs. Lentman was easy and pleasant as she came into the room. Anna was stiff and silent and very white. "We haven't seen you for a long time, Anna," Mrs. Lentman cordially began. "I was just getting worried, thinking you was sick. My, but it's a hot day today. Come into the sitting room, Anna, and Julia will make us some iced tea." Anna followed Mrs. Lentman into the other room in a stiff silence, and when there, she did not, as invited, take a chair. As always with Anna, when a thing had to come, it came very short and sharp. She found it hard to breathe just now, and every word came with a jerk. "Mrs. Lentman, it ain't true what Julia said about your taking that Lily's boy to keep. I told Julia when she told me she was crazy to talk so." Anna's real excitements stopped her breath and made her words come sharp and with a jerk. Mrs. Lentman's feelings spread her breath and made her words come slow, but more pleasant and more easy even than before. "Why, Anna," she began, "don't you see Lily couldn't keep her boy, for she is working at the bishop's now, and he is such a cute, dear little chap. And you know how fond I am of little fellers, and I thought it would be nice for Julia and for Willie to have a little brother. You know Julia always loves to play with babies, and I have to be away so much. And Willie, he is running in the streets every minute all the time. And, you see, a baby would be sort of nice company for Julia. And you know you are always saying, Anna, Julia should not be on the streets so much, and the baby will be so good to keep her in." Anna was every minute paler with indignation and with heat. "Mrs. Lentman, I don't see what business it is for you to take another baby for your own. When you can't do what's right by Julia and Willie, you got here already. There's Julia, nobody tells her a thing, when I ain't here. And who's going to tell her now how to do things for that baby? She ain't got no sense what's the right way to do with children. And you out all the time. You ain't got no time for your own either. And now, you want to be taking up with strangers. I know you was careless, Mrs. Lentman, but I didn't think that you could do this so. No, Mrs. Lentman, it ain't your duty to take up with no others. When you got two children of your own that got to get along just any way they can, and you know you ain't got any too much money all the time, and you are all so careless here and spend it all the time. And Julia and Willie growing big, it ain't right, Mrs. Lentman, to do so." This was as bad as it could be. Anna had never spoken her mind so to her friend before. Now it was too harsh for Mrs. Lentman to allow herself to really hear. If she really took the meaning in these words, she could never ask Anna to come into her house again. And she liked Anna very well, and was used to depend on her savings and her strength. And then, too, Mrs. Lentman could not really take in harsh ideas. She was too well diffused to catch the feel of any sharp, firm edge. Now she managed to understand all this in a way that made it easy for her to say, "Why, Anna, I think you feel too bad about seeing what the children are doing every minute in the day. Julia and Willie are real good, and they play with all the nicest children in the square. If you had some, all your own, Anna,
You see, it don't do no harm to let them do a little as they like. And Julia likes this baby so. And sweet, dear little boy, it would be so kind of bad to send him to asylum now. You know it would, Anna, when you like children so yourself and are so good to my Willie all the time. No, indeed, Anna. It's easy enough to say I should send this poor, cute little boy to asylum, when I could keep him here so nice. But you know, Anna, you wouldn't like to do it yourself. Now, you really know you wouldn't, Anna, though you talk to me so hard. My, it's hot today. What you doing with that iced tea in there, Julia, when Miss Annie is waiting all this time for her drink? Julia brought in the iced tea. She was so excited with the talk she had been hearing from the kitchen that she slopped it on the plate out of the glasses a good deal. But she was safe, for Anna felt this trouble so deep down that she did not even see those awkward, bony hands, adorned today with a new ring. Those stupid, foolish hands that always did things the wrong way. "Here, Miss Annie," Julia said. "Here, Miss Annie, is your glass of tea. I know you like it good and strong."
"No, Julia. I don't want no iced tea here. Your mama ain't able to afford now using her money upon iced tea for her friends. It ain't right. She should now any more. I go out now to see Mrs. Thrinton. She does all she can, and she is sick now, working so hard taking care of her own children. I go there now. Goodbye, Mrs. Lintman. I hope you don't get no bad luck doing what it ain't right for you to do."
"My, Miss Annie is real mad now," Julia said as the house shook, as the good Anna shut the outside door with a concentrated, shattering slam. It was some months now that Anna had been intimate with Mrs. Dretton. Mrs. Dretton had had a tumor and had come to Dr. Sonjan to be treated. During the course of her visits there, she and Anna had learned to like each other very well. There was no fever in this friendship. It was just the interchange of two hard-working, worrying women, the one large and motherly, with the pleasant, patient, soft, worn, tolerant face that comes with a German husband to obey, and seven solid girls and boys to bear and rear. And the other was our good Anna, with her spinster body, her firm jaw, her humorous, light, clean eyes, and her lined, worn, thin, pale yellow face. Mrs. Dretton lived a patient, homely, hard-working life. Her husband, an honest, decent man enough, was a brewer and somewhat given to over-drinking, and so he was often surly and unpleasant. The family of seven children was made up of four stalwart, cheery, filial sons and three hard-working, obedient, simple daughters. It was a family life the good Anna very much approved, and also she was much liked by them all. With a German woman's feeling for the masterhood in men, she was docile to the surly father and rarely rubbed him the wrong way. To the large, worn, patient, sickly mother, she was a sympathetic listener, wise in counsel, and most efficient in her help. The young ones, too, liked her very well. The sons teased her all the time and roared with boisterous pleasure when she gave them back sharp hits. The girls were all so good that her scoldings here were only in the shape of good advice, sweetened with new trimmings for their hats and ribbons, and sometimes on their birthdays, bits of jewels. It was here that Anna came for comfort after her grievous stroke at her friend the widow, Mrs. Lintman. Not that Anna would tell Mrs. Dretton of this trouble. She would never lay bare the wound that came to her through this idealized affection. Her affair with Mrs. Lintman was too sacred and too grievous ever to be told. But here in this large household, in busy movement and variety and strife, she could silence the uneasiness and pain of her own wound. The Drettons lived out in the country in one of the wooden, ugly houses that lie in groups outside of our large cities. The father and the sons all had their work here making beer, and the mother and her girls scoured and sewed and cooked. On Sundays, they were all washed very clean and smelling of kitchen soap. The sons, in their Sunday clothes, loafed around the house or in the village, and on special days went on picnics with their girls. The daughters in their awkward, colored finery went to church most of the day, and then walking with their friends. They always came together for their supper, where Anna always was most welcome, the jolly Sunday evening supper that German people love. Here Anna and the boys gave it to each other in sharp hits and hearty, boisterous laughter. The girl made things for them to eat and waited on them all. The mother loved all her children all the time, and the father joined in with his occasional unpleasant word that made a bitter feeling, but which they had all learned to pass as if it were not said. It was to the comfort of this house that Anna came that Sunday summer afternoon, after she had left Mrs. Lintman and her careless ways. The Dretton house was open all about. No one was there but Mrs. Dretton, resting in her rocking chair, out in the pleasant, scented summer air. Anna had had a hot walk from the cars. She went into the kitchen for a cooling drink, and then came out and sat down on the steps near Mrs. Dretton. Anna's anger had changed. A sadness had come to her. Now, with the patient, friendly, gentle mother talk of Mrs. Dretton, this sadness changed to resignation and to rest. As the evening came on, the young ones dropped in one by one. Soon the merry Sunday evening supper was begun. It had not been all comfort for our Anna these months of knowing Mrs. Dretton. It had made trouble for her with the family of her half-brother, the fat baker. Her half-brother, the fat baker, was a queer kind of a man. He was a huge, unwieldy creature, all puffed out all over, and no longer able to walk much, with his enormous body and the big, swollen, bursted veins in his great legs. He did not try to walk much now. He sat around his place, leaning on his great, thick stick, and watching his workmen at their work. On holidays, and sometimes of a Sunday, he went out in his bakery wagon. He went then to each customer he had and gave them each a large, sweet, raisined loaf or cakey bread. At every house, with many groans and gasps, he would descend his heavy weight out of the wagon, his good-featured, black-haired, flat, good-natured face shining with oily perspiration, with pride in labor, and with generous kindness. Up each stoop, he hobbled with the help of his big stick, and into the nearest chair in the kitchen or in the parlor, as the fashion of the house demanded, and there he sat and puffed, and then presented to the mistress or the cook the raisined German loaf his boy supplied him. Anna had never been a customer of his. She had always lived in another part of the town. But he never left her out in these bakery progresses of his, and always with his own hand. He gave her her festive loaf. Anna liked her half-brother well enough. She never knew him really well, for he rarely talked at all, and least of all to women. But he seemed to her honest and good and kind, and he never tried to interfere in Anna's ways. And then Anna liked the loaves of raisined bread, for in the summer she and the second girl could live on them and not be buying bread with the household money all the time. But things were not so simple with our Anna, with the other members of her half-brother's house. Her half-brother's family was made up of himself, his wife, and their two daughters. Anna never liked her brother's wife. The youngest of two daughters was named after her Aunt Anna. Anna never liked her half-brother's wife. This woman had been very good to Anna, never interfering in her ways, always glad to see her and to make her visits pleasant. But she had not found favor in our good Anna's sight. Anna had, too, no real affection for her nieces. She never scolded them or tried to guide them for their good. Anna never criticized or interfered in the running of her half-brother's house. Mrs. Federner was a good-looking, prosperous woman, a little harsh and cold within her soul, perhaps, but trying always to be pleasant, good, and kind. Her daughters were well-trained, quiet, obedient, well-dressed girls, and yet our good Anna loved them not, nor their mother, nor any of their ways. It was in this house that Anna had first met her friend, the widow Mrs. Lintman. The Federners had never seemed to feel it wrong in Anna, her devotion to this friend, and her care of her and of her children. Mrs. Lintman and Anna and her feelings were all somehow too big for their attack. But Mrs. Federner had the mind and tongue that blackened things. Not really to blacken black, of course, but just to roughen and to rub on a little smut. She could somehow make even the face of the Almighty seem pimply and a little coarse, and so she always did this with her friends, though not with the intent to interfere. This was really true with Mrs. Lintman, that Mrs. Federner did not mean to interfere. But Anna's friendship with the Drettons was a very different matter. Why should Mrs. Dretton, that poor common working wife of a man who worked for others in a brewery and who always drank too much and was not like a thrifty, decent German man, why should that Mrs. Dretton and her ugly, awkward daughters be getting presents from her husband's sister all the time, and her husband always so good to Anna, and one of the girls having her name, too? And those Drettons, all strangers to her and never going to come to any good. It was not right for Anna to do so. Mrs. Federner knew better than to say such things straight out to her husband's fiery, stubborn sister, but she lost no chance to let Anna feel and see what they all thought. It was easy to blacken all the Drettons, their poverty, the husband's drinking, the four big sons carrying on and always lazy, the awkward, ugly daughters dressing up with Anna's help and trying to look so fine, and the poor, weak, hard-working, sickly mother, so easy to degrade with large dosings of contemptuous pity. Anna could not do much with these attacks, for Mrs. Federner always ended with, "And you so good to them, Anna, all the time. I don't see how they could get along at all if you didn't help them all the time. But you are so good, Anna, and got such a feeling heart, just like your brother, that you give anything away you got to anybody that will ask you for it. And that's shameless enough to take it when they ain't no relatives of yours. Poor Mrs. Dretton, she is a good woman. Poor thing, it must be awful hard for her to have to take things from strangers all the time, and her husband spending it on drink. I was saying to Mrs. Lintman, Anna, only yesterday, how I never was sorry for anyone as Mrs. Dretton, and how good it was for you to help them all the time." All this meant a gold watch and chain to her goddaughter for her birthday the next month, and a new silk umbrella for the elder sister. Poor Anna. And she did not love them very much, these relatives of hers, and they were the only kin she had. Mrs. Lintman never joined in these attacks. Mrs. Lintman was diffuse and careless in her ways, but she never worked such things for her own ends, and she was too sure of Anna to be jealous of her other friends. All this time, Anna was leading her happy life with Dr. Sonjan. She had every day her busy time. She cooked and saved and sewed and scrubbed and scolded. And every night, she had her happy time in seeing her doctor like the fine things she bought so cheap and cooked so good for him to eat. And then he would listen and laugh so loud as she told him stories of what had happened on that day. The doctor, too, liked it better all the time, and several times in these 5 years, he had, of his own motion, raised her wages. Anna was content with what she had and grateful for all her doctor did for her. So Anna's serving and her giving life went on, each with its varied pleasures and its pains. The adopting of the little boy did not put an end to Anna's friendship for the widow Mrs. Lintman. Neither the good Anna nor the careless Mrs. Lintman would give each other up, excepting for the gravest cause. Mrs. Lintman was the only romance Anna ever knew. A certain magnetic brilliancy in person and in manner made Mrs. Lintman a woman other women loved. Then, too, she was generous and good and honest, though she was so careless always in her ways. And then she trusted Anna and liked her better than any of her other friends. And Anna always felt this very much. No, Anna could not give up Mrs. Lintman, and soon she was busier than before making Julia do things right for little Johnny. And now new schemes were working strong in Mrs. Lintman's head, and Anna must listen to her plans and help her make them work. Mrs. Lintman always loved best in her work to deliver young girls who were in trouble. She would keep these in her house until they could go to their homes or to their work and slowly pay her back the money for their care. Anna had always helped her friend to do this thing, for like all the good women of the decent poor, she felt it hard that girls should not be helped. Not girls that were really bad, of course. These she condemned and hated in her heart and with her tongue, but honest, decent, good, hard-working, foolish girls who were in trouble. For such as these, Anna always liked to give her money and her strength. Now Mrs. Lintman thought that it would pay to take a big house for herself to take in girls and to do everything in a big way. Anna did not like this plan. Anna was never daring in her ways. Save, and you will have the money you have saved, was all that she could know. Not that the good Anna had it so. She saved and saved and always saved. And then here and there, to this friend and to that, to one in her trouble and to the other in her joy, in sickness, death, and weddings, or to make young people happy, it always went, the hard-earned money she had saved. Anna could not clearly see how Mrs. Lentman could make a big house pay. In the small house where she had these girls, it did not pay. And in a big house, there was so much more that she would spend. Such things were hard for the good Anna to very clearly see. One day she came into the Lentman house. "Anna," Mrs. Lentman said, "you know that nice big house on the next corner that we saw to rent? I took it for a year just yesterday. I paid a little down, you know, so I could have it sure all right. And now you fix it up just like you want. I let you do just what you like with it." Anna knew that it was now too late. However, "but Mrs. Lentman, you said you would not take another house. You said so just last week." "Oh, Mrs. Lentman, I didn't think that you would do this so." Anna knew so well it was too late. "I know, Anna, but it was such a good house. Just right, you know, and someone else was there to see, and, you know, you said it suited very well. And if I didn't take it, the others said they would. And I wanted to ask you, only there wasn't time. And really, Anna, I don't need much help. It will go so well, I know. I just need a little to begin and to fix up with, and that's all, Anna, that I need. And I know it will go awful well. You wait, Anna, and you'll see. And I let you fix it up just like you want. And you will make it look so nice. You got such sense in all these things. It will be a good place. You see, Anna, if I ain't right in what I say." Of course, Anna gave the money for this thing, though she could not believe that it was best. No, it was very bad. Mrs. Lentman could never make it pay, and it would cost so much to keep. But what could our poor Anna do? Anna's strength in her control of what was done in Mrs. Lentman's house was not now what it had been before that Lily's little Johnny came. That thing had been for Anna a defeat. There had been no fighting to a finish, but Mrs. Lentman had very surely won. Mrs. Lentman needed Anna just as much as Anna needed Mrs. Lentman, but Mrs. Lentman was more ready to risk Anna's loss. And so the good Anna grew always weaker in her power to control. In friendship, power always has its downward curve. One's strength to manage rises always higher, until there comes a time one does not win. And though one may not really lose, still from the time that victory is not sure, one's power slowly ceases to be strong. It is only in a close tie, such as marriage, that influence can mount and grow always stronger with the years, and never meet with a decline. It can only happen so when there is no way to escape. Friendship goes by favor. There is always danger of a break or of a stronger power coming in between. Influence can only be a steady march when one can surely never break away. Anna wanted Mrs. Lentman very much, and Mrs. Lentman needed Anna. But there were always other ways to do, and if Anna had once given up, she might do so again. So why should Mrs. Lentman have real fear? No, while the good Anna did not come to open fight, she had been stronger. Now Mrs. Lentman could always hold out longer. She knew, too, that Anna had a feeling heart. Anna could never stop doing all she could for anyone that really needed help. Poor Anna had no power to say no. And then, too, Mrs. Lentman was the only romance Anna ever knew. Romance is the ideal in one's life, and it is very lonely living with it lost. So the good Anna gave all her savings for this place, although she knew that this was not the right way for her friend to do. For some time now, they were all very busy fixing up the house. It swallowed all Anna's savings fixing up this house. For when Anna once began to make it nice, she could not leave it be until it was as good as for the purpose it should be. Somehow, it was Anna now that really took the interest in the house. Mrs. Lindman, now the thing was done, seemed very lifeless, without interest in the house, uneasy in her mind and restless in her ways, and more diffuse even than before in her attention. She was good and kind to all the people in her house, and let them do whatever they thought best. Anna did not fail to see that Mrs. Lindman had something on her mind that was all new. What was it that disturbed Mrs. Lindman so? She kept on saying it was all in Anna's head. She had no trouble now at all. Everybody was so good, and it was all so nice in the new house. But surely, there was something here that was all wrong. Anna heard a good deal of all this from her half-brother's wife, the hard-speaking Mrs. Federner. Through the fog of dust and work and furnishing in the new house, and through the disturbed mind of Mrs. Lindman, and with the dark hints of Mrs. Federner, there loomed up to Anna's sight a man, a new doctor, that Mrs. Lindman knew. Anna had never met the man, but she heard of him very often now, not from her friend, the widow Mrs. Lindman. Anna knew that Mrs. Lindman made of him a mystery that Anna had not the strength just then to vigorously break down. Mrs. Federner gave always dark suggestions and unpleasant hints. Even good Mrs. Dretton talked of it. Mrs. Lindman never spoke of the new doctor more than she could help. This was more mysterious and unpleasant, and very hard for our good Anna to endure. Anna's troubles came all of them at once. Here in Mrs. Lindman's house loomed up dismal and forbidding, a mysterious, perhaps an evil man. In Dr. Sonjan's house were beginning signs of interest in the doctor in a woman. This, too, Mrs. Federner often told to the poor Anna. The doctor surely would be married soon. He liked so much now to go to Mr. Weingartner's house, where there was a daughter who loved doctor. Everybody knew. In these days, the living room in her half-brother's house was Anna's torture chamber. And worst of all, there was so much reason for her half-sister's words. The doctor certainly did look like marriage, and Mrs. Lindman acted very queer. Poor Anna. Dark were these days, and much she had to suffer. The doctor's trouble came to a head the first. It was true, doctor was engaged and to be married soon. He told Anna so himself. What was the good Anna now to do? Dr. Sonjan wanted her, of course, to stay. Anna was so sad with all these troubles. She knew here in the doctor's house it would be bad when he was married. But she had not the strength now to be firm and go away. She said at last that she would try and stay. Doctor got married now very soon. Anna made the house all beautiful and clean, and she really hoped that she might stay. But this was not for long. Mrs. Sonjan was a proud, unpleasant woman. She wanted constant service and attention and never even a thank you to a servant. Soon, all doctor's old people went away. Anna went to doctor and explained. She told him what all the servants thought of his new wife. Anna bade him a sad farewell and went away. Anna was now most uncertain what to do. To be continued. You've been listening to From the Public Domain. Today's selections were read by Susie Alphens. This is your host, Susie Alphens.